Have you ever come across the concept of custom beauty? I know it sounds skeptical. It's like every time you scroll online, there's a new miracle product promising to fix your hair and skin woes. But let me tell you, PROS is the real deal when it comes to custom beauty. It's not just some marketing gimmick. Your personalized formula wouldn't even exist without your input. Each product on PROS is whipped up just for you, tailored to your specific needs, and they go deep into their consultations, delving into over 80 factors to really get a handle on your life and beauty goals. We're talking about everything from your hair and skin concerns to what you eat, how much you work out, and even how stressed you are. My friend Jen has been using PROS and raving about it non-stop. They even asked her about her zip code to suss out things like water hardness and UV index. When I hit the States later this year, PROS is going to be at the top of my shopping list. But until then, I'm living vicariously through Jen's luscious locks and glowing skin. Trust me, this stuff is the real deal. PROS is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at PROSE.com/morbidology. That is PROSE.com/morbidology for your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formula, PROSE.com/morbidology. Ever felt like life's rhythm doesn't quite sync with your payday schedule? Yeah, I get it. That's why there's Earnin, your ticket to getting your hard-earned cash when you need it, not just every couple of weeks. Imagine this, you're out with friends and suddenly they decide on an impromptu dinner. But oops, you haven't received your paycheck yet. Or maybe you realize you forgot to grab a last-minute gift for someone special. It's those little moments that can throw us off. Well, Earnin has got your back. With the Earnin app, you can access up to $100 a day or up to $750 per pay period, all before your official payday. It's simple. Just download the app, verify your paycheck, and boom, peace of mind is yours. Join over 3.5 million customers who've said goodbye to payday worries and hello to financial flexibility with Earnin. Download Earnin today. Spelled EARNIN in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Morbidology under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. Morbidology under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust. Member FDIC. Today's sponsor is the amazing Uni Dragon. They create and sell premium sets of wood and jigsaw puzzles and offer jigsaw puzzles for both adults and children to entertain all experience levels. I've recently just completed the Majestic Wolf puzzle. It's a colourful design and made in wood, which makes it super sturdy. What I love about Unidragon jigsaw puzzles is that their designs are extremely unique, and they even come in their own unique shape, as opposed to the regular square or rectangular. They've got some amazing new designs up on their website, including the playful parrots and the fiery fox. Unidragon jigsaw puzzles come in a great quality box too, which make them perfect for gifts for your loved ones as well. This makes them really easy to store if you're like me and you enjoy collecting jigsaw puzzles. Jigsaw puzzles really are a great way to pass the time. They're fun, and they're a low-stakes activity which can help reduce anxiety and even increase your memory and problem-solving skills. Listeners of Morbidology have a special discount code for 10% off their order on unidragon.com. Just use the code DRAGONB4, that is DRAGONB4, at unidragon.com, and make sure to hit me up on social media and let me know what jigsaw puzzle you got. Before you go any further with this episode, I want you to download the free app Vodacast and listen to this episode there. Vodacast is a podcast player, but what sets it apart from regular podcast players is that they provide deeper digital stories. For example, you could be listening to this episode on Vodacast and immerse yourself in some bonus content, such as photographs related to the case, including photographs of the victim and photographs of the criminal investigation, as well as links to newspaper articles and much more. As you listen on Vodacast, the bonus content appears at the appropriate time in the episode, so you could be listening about certain evidence and see it on your screen for yourself. I'm going to be mentioning certain things that you can see on Vodacast throughout this episode, so download the app now to make sure that you don't miss out. Just click the link in my show notes or search for Vodacast on the Apple App Store or Google Play. Welcome to Morbidology. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, Mysteries Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join Morbidology on Patreon for exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, exclusive merch, ad-free and early release episodes, and much more. It was morning rush hour in Melbourne, Australia on the 29th of January, 2009. Commuters were slowly moving in traffic along the Westgate Bridge when a white Toyota Land Cruiser heading towards the city slowed down in the left-hand lane before finally coming to a halt. The driver exited his vehicle, opened the rear passenger door and lifted out a small child. What happened next was so horrific that it still reverberates across the nation today. Darcy Freeman was just about to turn 5 years old, and she'd been anticipating her first day of primary school at St. Joseph's School. On that fateful morning, the 29th of January, 2009, her father, Arthur Freeman, had arranged to take Darcy and her older brother to school. He put Darcy in the back seat of his car, along with her two brothers, 6-year-old Ben and 2-year-old Jonathan. According to the numerous witnesses who were behind the family's car, Arthur slowed to a stop at the highest point of the bridge and lifted Darcy out. Witnesses said that she appeared to be limp and that she didn't fight. They only hoped that she was unconscious. Arthur then lifted Darcy to the edge of the bridge, lifted her over, and then let her go. You can see a video of Arthur pulling over on the bridge on the Vodacast app. Darcy fell past the railings, past the line of cars, past the pylons and hurled 58 metres into the water below. A woman who witnessed the ordeal jumped out of her car and ran towards Arthur, screaming at him. Arthur ran back to his car and then drove off with his two sons, still strapped into the back seat. Horrified onlookers immediately called police to report what they had just witnessed.
Yes, good morning to you. I'm on the Westgate Bridge at the moment. I've just been witness to someone throwing their child over the bridge.
So, Westgate Bridge?
On the Westgate Bridge, leading into the city.
Okay, so you're going inbound towards the city?
Yeah, inbound towards the city, yes.
Okay.
Right, the guy's driven off, but we got his registration. And we can see the child floating in the water, yeah? Yeah,
okay.
Male. And was there anyone else in the car?
I couldn't see. I was just driving.
So thrown a child, did you say?
Yes.
Give me a description of the driver first, of the vehicle.
The male was about mid-40s.
Mid-40s, yeah.
About 6 foot. Medium to solid build and blonde to sort of receding hair. I can't be sure. A white four-wheel drive vehicle. I think it was a Toyota Land Cruiser.
Water police arrived at the scene first, a and within 10 minutes of the first flurry of phone calls, they were able to retrieve Darcy from the Yarra River near the pumping station at Spotswood. Darcy was still clinging to life and had sustained a number of internal injuries from the fall. According to one of the responding officers, when he received the call, he thought that it must have been a hoax. But if not a hoax, then it must have been a doll as opposed to a child. Paramedics worked frantically on Darcy for around 50 minutes before she was flown by helicopter to Melbourne's Royal Children's Hospital. However, Darcy was pronounced dead around 4 hours later, despite the best efforts to save her. Around an hour after Darcy was dropped from the bridge, Arthur was arrested outside of the Commonwealth Law Courts, located in the city. Police had been alerted to him by a member of security staff, who had been trained to notice when people are in distress. They noticed Arthur in the foyer of the building, crying and shaking uncontrollably. There's a video of this up on the Vodacast app. One of the other guards described Arthur as looking as though he'd had enough. His two sons, Ben and Jonathan, were clinging to their father as he begged the security guard to take them for him. Arthur was struggling to speak, and it was Ben who gave the security guards their names. When police arrived at the court, Arthur was arrested. Meanwhile, his former wife and the mother of Darcy, Peta Freeman, was called and informed of the tragic situation. She rushed to the hospital to be with her daughter. According to police who had arrested Arthur, he was unable to speak and was shaking and weeping, seemingly in a state of shock. When Darcy was pronounced dead in the hospital, he was charged with her murder. He was scheduled to appear in court the following day. However, it was announced that he was psychologically unfit to do so. The court was informed that he was in an acute psychiatric state, and there had been concerns that he was suicidal. He was remanded in custody to appear in court in May. Investigators were quick to announce that they did not yet have a motivation behind the senseless murder, but the fact that Arthur had been arrested outside of family court hinted that the family may have been going through some kind of custody battle. In fact, Zelma Rudstein, who worked with the law firm Rudstein Cron Lawyers, said that they had acted for Arthur and described him as a devoted and loving father. Investigators would reveal that Arthur may have been considering throwing all three of his children off the bridge, but was spooked by the woman who had come running towards him. They said that they considered this theory based on a phone call that Arthur had received from Peta just before he threw Darcy over the bridge. They would not immediately disclose what the phone call was in regards to. The investigation into the murder would reveal that the couple had just reached a custody agreement the day before Darcy was killed. Darcy had been born in the United Kingdom on the 11th of February 2004. Arthur and Peta had met while in Australia, and then shortly before their marriage in 1999, they moved to the United Kingdom. Darcy was an extremely strong-willed child and spirited. She loved her two brothers and cousins and really enjoyed music and playing on her trampoline. Her favourite song was Tie Me Kangaroo Down, Sport. You can see a photograph of Darcy up on the Vodacast app. In 2006, the family moved back to Australia, where Arthur remained unemployed. The couple then separated in March of 2007 and divorced in 2008. They shared custody of Darcy, Ben and Jonathan, but then in late 2008, Peta sought to alter the custody arrangements. Just the day before Darcy was killed, Arthur and Peta had reached an agreement in the Federal Magistrates Court over the amount of time that they could spend with the children. Up until then, each parent had 3 days with the children, but the changed living arrangements meant that Peta had more time with the children than Arthur. Both parents would retain equal shared parental responsibility for long-term decisions about the care, welfare, and development of the children, but they would be staying with Arthur for 3 days every second week and one Thursday afternoon or early evening in the alternate week. As Darcy was starting school, this was taken into consideration during the decision. According to Peta, Arthur seemed happy with the agreement, and it was an agreement made with the consent of both parents, also known as a consent order. That night, Arthur had Darcy and her two brothers, and they spent the night at the beach house of his parents in Aries Inlet. While Peta believed that Arthur was happy with the arrangement, things couldn't have been further from the truth. That night, Arthur phoned a number of friends and said that he was angry and upset with the decision, adding that the court was not supportive of fathers in custody disputes. He called Elizabeth Lamb, a friend in the United Kingdom with whom he had been romantically involved. He was desperate enough to talk to her that he called her 9 times, between 10 p.m. and 1:54 a.m. The following morning, Arthur was supposed to bring the 3 children to school, where he was supposed to meet Peta and her mother, so that they could celebrate the significant milestone in Darcy's life, her first day of school. After leaving his parents' home, Arthur began to drive erratically, tailgating other cars and speeding. He once again called Elizabeth, and this time she picked up. He told her that he had just lost his children and that everywhere he turned, there were angry women. According to Elizabeth, Arthur loved his children, loved being a part of their life, and felt as though they had been taken away from him. As she said, "I felt that, you know, he was having a good cry and that the reality of the situation would settle. It didn't even enter my head that he would harm anybody." Never within a million years did Elizabeth think that within moments of that phone call, Arthur was going to throw his little girl to her death. The murder of any child is, of course, a completely heinous and crushing crime. But for a child to be killed in such a barbaric and public manner completely shocked and traumatized the whole of Australia. It led to an immediate outpouring of grief and support. Victoria State Premier John Brumby stated, "I just shuddered when I heard about it. You just think, how can that happen?" Numerous people living in the area would flock to the Westgate Bridge to mourn Darcy and bring flowers, candles and trinkets to memorialise her, while others would flock to Facebook and share their condolences. One card read, "You didn't deserve to die that way," while another read, "Life was cut too short for such an innocent young princess." Classmates of Darcy from kindergarten also penned heartfelt tributes to their friend. One staff member wrote how Darcy was always so proud of her achievements, while another note read how they would miss their energetic friend. Her family would release a tribute to Darcy. Her uncle, Tim Barnes, said that she was determined and strong-willed, and absolutely loved her 2 brothers.
"It is with great sadness that we sit here representing our family following the tragic loss of our beautiful young girl, Darcy. We would like to say on behalf of our sister, her 2 boys, and our family that we all feel an extreme sense of loss and emptiness. We are in deep mourning over this tragic event. We are fortunate to have the support of our family and friends to help us through these trying times. Darcy had a very determined nature. She displayed a very strong will and stood up for everything she believed in. She loved both of her brothers and particularly adored her older brother, Ben. She had a passion for music. In particular, Timey Kangaroo Down Sport was one of her favourite songs. Darcy thoroughly enjoyed playing with her brothers and cousins. She could spend hours playing on the trampoline with everyone. The family must now begin to look to the future. We will strive to provide the best possible care for Peta and Darcy's 2 brothers, Ben and Jack. There are still many issues to be resolved, and we are working through them, keeping the needs of the 2 boys at the forefront of our decisions. Our family has been overwhelmed by the public support shown to us from around the world. We wish to thank the public for their heartfelt sympathy and well wishes. We would also like to take this opportunity to specifically thank the Victorian Police and the staff at the Royal Children's Hospital. Every single person involved has been simply wonderful. Words cannot express our appreciation for the wonderful care given to Darcy during her final hours."
Speaking on behalf of the family, he said that they would love to see an annual Children's Day dedicated to those that were taken too early in their lives.
"Our family has discussed some of the issues that have been noted in the media, in particular the reference to the public's desire to hold a memorial service in memory of Darcy. We are in favour of an event being held at a park where children have the opportunity to embrace life and enjoy activities whilst having fun with their families. Our family has also agreed that we would love to see a day dedicated to honour all children taken from us too early in their lives. Our desire is for this to be a celebration where families rejoice together through fun and laughter. Moving forward from here, we would like the media to respect our need and desire for privacy and to leave us to deal with all of life's future challenges as they arise. We understand the public's desire for information and connection, however, we value our privacy greatly. The ongoing care and development of Ben and Jack is paramount to us, and privacy will assist us greatly with this. We will be holding a private ceremony for Darcy and request that our privacy be respected. We are starting to look to the future, and once again we express our deepest gratitude. We thank everyone for their wonderful support.
He also said that the family felt an extreme sense of emptiness and said that they would probably never understand the reasons how Arthur could have killed his own daughter. You can watch the entire statement from Tim up on the Vodacast app. He revealed that for the past 2 years, they had been calling out for help to various authorities. They had been aware of the family's fear for the safety of Darcy and her two brothers, and as Tim said, unfortunately, no one would listen. He said that the family felt as though the judicial system had failed the family and would continue to fail families just like them unless someone in authority started to take action. I've recently become obsessed with Foreo, and they've sponsored this episode. Foreo exists to reinvent beauty and wellness by offering innovative devices that install confidence and improve your skin. I've been using the Luna 3, which features thin touch points for cleansing your face. I've also been using the UFO Mini, which is a 90-second face treatment utilizing hyper-infusion technology. It leaves my skin glowing and radiant in just 90 seconds. I have quite sensitive skin, and Foreo genuinely leaves my skin feeling amazing. I've also been using the massage function on Luna 3, which directs lower frequency pulsations to wrinkle-prone areas and smooths the appearance of fine lines. I've been doing this for a couple of weeks now and already see a difference in the look and feel of my skin. Foreo are offering Morbidology listeners an Amazon bundle, which includes the Luna 3, the UFO Mini, and Call It A Night UFO Activated Mask. The set is valued at $307.99 and retails on Amazon at $249. But with the code MORBID50, you can get it for $199. There are two other bundles, but that's the one I've got. It's been a tough year and a half for all of us, and it's about time we deserve to have that moment of pampering zen. I swear by their products now and use them every single day. Just click the link in my show notes to the Amazon bundles, or go to Foreo's Amazon shop and click the bundles tab and use code MORBID50 for 35% off. Have you ever come across the concept of custom beauty? I know it sounds skeptical. It's like every time you scroll online, there's a new miracle product promising to fix your hair and skin woes. But let me tell you, PROS is the real deal when it comes to custom beauty. It's not just some marketing gimmick. Your personalized formula wouldn't even exist without your input. Each product on PROS is whipped up just for you, tailored to your specific needs, and they go deep into their consultations, delving into over 80 factors to really get a handle on your life and beauty goals. We're talking about everything from your hair and skin concerns to what you eat, how much you work out, and even how stressed you are. My friend Jen has been using PROS and raving about it non-stop. They even asked her about her zip code to suss out things like water hardness and UV index. When I hit the States later this year, PROS is going to be at the top of my shopping list. But until then, I'm living vicariously through Jen's luscious locks and glowing skin. Trust me, this stuff is the real deal. PROS is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at PROS.com/morbidology. That is PROSE.com/morbidology for your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formula, PROS.com/morbidology.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Like many of you, I'm hoping that this summer we can go back to normal. You know, go and see our friends, go to the cinema, hang out in a bar. If you want it to feel like summertime already and keep yourself preoccupied while we wait for things to return to normal, then I think you should download Best Fiends. It's been keeping me busy during the past while, and it's a great game filled with cute characters, which is a refreshing break from true crime writing. They've even sponsored this episode of Morbidology. With Best Fiends, the fun never ends. There's thousands of levels and tons of characters. I'm on level 287, but there's new puzzles to solve each and every day. It's one of those games where 30 minutes really feels like 30 seconds. Best Fiends is super easy to follow and it's fun to play, making it the perfect game for both adults and children. It's a casual game that won't stress you out, and it's very easy to pass the time with. I find myself playing it before bed and when I'm out walking my dog. Download Best Fiends for free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. Professor Bob Montgomery, the president of the Australian Psychological Society, said that there were two things that needed to happen to reduce the number of fathers who kill their children. He said that in the short term, the federal government needed to boost the qualifications of people, providing mandatory mediation to couples going through marital issues or custody battles. In the long term, he said that effective parenting courses and counselling needed to be widely rolled out, which would better educate people about parenting and improve their capacity for healthy relationships. He said that there was a small but steady number of cases wherein a separated parent, usually a father, reacts very strongly with anger or out of depression to an issue involving their child. He stated, "For them, it makes sense to kill their children and then often kill themselves." There was also much debate about the safety of the West Gate Bridge. At the time, there were no suicide prevention barriers on the bridge, but they had been in the pipelines. You can see a photograph of the bridge up on the Vodacast app. Victorian Premier John Brumby said that they were now considering fast-tracking the construction of the barriers. They had been expected to be finished around the end of the following year, but it seemed more important now than ever to finish it as soon as possible, so a similar tragedy could not occur in the future. The suicide prevention barriers had first been recommended to the government in a coroner's report in 2005, but the recommendation was renewed just a year before Darcy's murder, when a woman jumped from the bridge with her child, killing them both. In fact, just 7 days after Darcy's murder, 17-year-old Alim Halkick jumped from the bridge to his death. Between 2004 and December of 2008, the coroner's office recorded more than 60 deaths from the bridge. A lot of people felt as though the push for the installation of suicide prevention barriers was somewhat too little too late. It would be announced that temporary wire and concrete fencing would be installed as suicide barriers on the West Gate Bridge within the next 3 months. Until then, security guards were hired to patrol the West Gate Bridge. After Tim's comments, Premier John Brumby said that his preliminary research suggested that there had been no contact with authorities before Darcy was killed. His statement was echoed by the Department of Human Services, which said Darcy and her brothers were not known to them. In regards to the custody hearing just the day before Darcy was killed, no concerns were raised about the children's safety. However, Federal Attorney General Robert McClelland said that his department would be reviewing the case. All of the court transcripts relating to the Freeman case were reviewed, and in May, Chief Justice Diana Bryant said that the family court's handling of the custody case could not be blamed for Darcy's death. She said that the parties had ultimately reached their own agreements as to the care arrangements for the children. Darcy and her two brothers have been living with both Arthur and Peter by agreement in a shared care arrangement for the last 2 years. She said that having looked at the transcripts, there was nothing to indicate that Arthur was a dangerous man and would have brought harm to his children. while the family court tried to distance themselves from the murder. They had been lambasted in the past for the Family Law Act. Back in 2006, the Howard government strengthened shared parenting provisions within the Family Law Act. The purpose was to make it easier for parents to see their children and care for their children after a divorce. It favoured 50-50 access to children, as well as shared responsibility in decisions such as education and health. On the surface, it seemed like a positive step forward and preferable. However, there were a number of psychologists, as well as legal experts, that were concerned that the rights of parents were overshadowing what was best for the child. In fact, the Safer Family Law campaign claimed that the amendments were actually forcing children to be in equal contact with violent or sexually abusive parents. Barbara Biggs, the campaign coordinator, said, "Under the current act, parents who raise allegations of abuse against their former partners are forced to pay all legal costs if those claims cannot be proven. They can also be viewed as unfriendly or hostile by the court, and as a result, that parent can lose full custody. It's a huge deterrent to both men and women who feel like they are pressured into sharing parenting orders, even though they have grave concerns." In mid-May, Arthur appeared in court via video link for committal hearings. During the hearing, Magistrate Peter Reardon asked court prosecutor Gavin Silbert how Darcy's brothers were coping. He replied that they were with their mother and that the rest of the family were in court for the hearing, and that was all they wanted him to say for the moment. Arthur showed no semblance of emotion as his family were spoken about. Arthur was remanded into custody. Outside of court, Prosecutor Silbert said that the family were still grieving and traumatised over what had happened. He said that they believed that the government had a duty of care to do something about it, and that while temporary suicide prevention barriers had been installed, it was all too late for Darcy. Attorney General Robert McClelland would subsequently announce a review and a number of moves that were aimed at strengthening the legal system to provide more protection for women and children from horrifying family violence. He wanted a complete overhaul of Australia's family law, and specifically asked for Darcy's murder to be considered in the review. In a separate review, it was announced that the Australian Law Reform Commission would be looking into whether gaps in the law were failing society's most vulnerable. In October, it was announced that an annual Children's Day called Children 365 would be launched on the 1st of November, and it would be held the last Sunday of Children's Week each year. The event had been inspired totally by the tragic murder of Darcy. It would feature a range of activities for children and adults to partake in together, and they would get a calendar with monthly ideas for ways to spend time with children. Darcy's uncle Tim welcomed the launch on behalf of the family and said that celebrating children should continue forever. Just days after Children 365, a committal hearing was held, and it revealed some more information regarding the tragedy on the bridge. The contents of the phone call were released, and they certainly did indicate that Arthur had planned on killing all of his children. Moments before he stopped on the bridge, he had placed a phone call to PETA and told her to say goodbye to their children, stating, "You will never see them again." PETA rang Arthur several times but was ignored before he finally picked up and said, "Who is this?" PETA said, "It's me." And Arthur replied, "You will never see them again," before hanging up. After this phone call, PETA reported their three children missing. But shortly thereafter, she received a phone call from her lawyer, who said that Ben and Jonathan were safe, but that local news was reporting that the little girl had been thrown from the West Gate Bridge. Witness Barry Nelson told the committal hearing that he was behind Arthur in his car on the bridge and had witnessed him throwing Darcy over the side. He said, "I basically saw the child tipped over the side of the bridge, very clear in my mind seeing her hair and limbs as the child left the hands of the person in question." Barry said that he shouted at Arthur, asking him what he was doing, but said that Arthur had a blank expression on his face and he didn't acknowledge him. Prosecutor Silbert said that after getting back in the car with his two sons, Ben asked if they could go back and get Darcy, because she couldn't swim. Iana Katz, a psychologist at the family court, said that after killing Darcy, Arthur drove to the Commonwealth Law Courts. She described him as being in a chaotic state. She said that he had a painful look on his eyes and said that tears were running down his face. Dr. Justin Duplice told the Melbourne Magistrates Court that the day after the murder, he had attempted to do a medical assessment of Arthur. He said that Arthur was trembling and shaking, which was consistent with somebody being in shock. He said that he cried throughout the entire meeting. He was nonverbal and did not even acknowledge the doctor's presence in the room. He told the court that he was concerned for Arthur's well-being and ordered that he not be left alone out of fear that he would harm himself. He ordered that Arthur receive immediate psychiatric care. As mentioned earlier, Arthur, Darcy and her two brothers had spent the night before the murder at Arthur's parents' beach house. Arthur's father Peter would tell the courtroom that that night Arthur had been very distressed and felt as though he should have fought harder for custody of the children. He said that he felt set up by the psychologist who was involved in the custody proceedings. He said, Arthur felt he was always trying to justify his rights to be a parent against continual legal attack. Peter said that on the morning of the murder, he had been concerned about his son's stress levels and suggested that the children stay home from school that day. When Arthur said no, Peter then asked if he wanted him to accompany him in the car, and he said no. Documents presented showed that Peter had been concerned for the safety of their three children when in custody of Arthur. In a statement just after they split up back in 2007, Peter said, I told Dr. Temperman that I believed he would kill my children and that I believed he was vengeful enough to kill my children to get back at me. She said that Arthur had large mood swings and would go from anger and vengefulness to remorse and then back again. It would be revealed that the separation between Arthur and Peter had been extremely bitter in the lead up to Darcy's murder, with police being called on numerous occasions. Peter was so afraid of Arthur that she had kept her address private. She had feared that shortly after they broke up, he was going to kill Jonathan. She said that on one occasion shortly after they broke up, Arthur had shown up to her home, grabbed Jonathan off her, and she feared that he was going to throw him against the fireplace and kill him. She said, Mom and I fought him and I bit him to get him to let the baby go, because he is incredibly strong and he wouldn't let go. We got the baby away from him and I raised the baby next door to the neighbour and asked him to care for the baby. In fact, it would be revealed that during the custody hearing the day before Darcy's murder, a clinical psychologist who worked on the case had noted a past history of family violence perpetrated by Arthur against Peter. The only time Arthur spoke during the two-day committal hearing was when he pleaded not guilty. He was ordered to stand trial on the 7th of April 2010. In November, Peter applied for Arthur's assets. There had been a court order restraining order over Arthur's property, but lawyers for Peter were seeking access to two of his bank accounts, which were worth around $40,000 as well as his Land Rover. The court were informed that Peter desperately needed financial assistance to support herself and their two surviving children. The court would ultimately grant Peter access. The findings of the Family Law Review were released towards the end of January. They recommended that courts and staff have a full understanding of domestic violence and that a risk assessment be carried out on families instead of the current system of parents engaging in a dispute filing documents. Professor Richard Chisholm, who had undertaken the evaluation, said that there was nothing in the file which suggested that officers had any reason to fear for the safety of Darcy or her siblings. He said that the current law in regards to custody set fathers up to believe that they were entitled to a 50-50 time split with their children after divorce, when this was never the Parliament's intention, nor any actual part of the law. He said that a lot of women in custody battles were reluctant to raise allegations of violence, in part because courts could punish them by hitting them with the entire proceedings bill if their allegations were not proven. He revealed that this was the case for Peter, who had been afraid of raising allegations of violence from Arthur in case she was considered an unfriendly parent, who was determined to break up the relationship between Arthur and their children. The report would upset and anger men's rights groups, who said that shared parenting worked well. Professor Chisholm said that the task going forward was to focus on the best interests of the children, as opposed to the best interests of the parents, and to achieve this, legislative change is necessary so that judges don't apply a one-size-fits-all approach to all custody battles. Is there something interfering with your happiness, or are you apprehensive about reaching out for help? BetterHelp is here to help you and they're today's sponsor of Morbidology. BetterHelp is not self-help, it's professional counseling available to you online or over the phone. BetterHelp is more affordable and accessible than traditional offline counseling, and they offer financial aid. Sadly, sometimes traditional offline counseling is not locally available for everybody, but BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide. They have licensed professional counselors specializing in a broad variety of areas, including depression, sleeping, self-esteem, grief, and much more. Everything you share with your counselor is confidential and they are matched to your specific needs. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/morbidology. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/morbidology. While the trial was expected to begin in the beginning of April, it would be delayed for Arthur to have a psychiatric evaluation. It wouldn't be until March the following year that the murder trial finally began. During the opening statements, the prosecution took the jury through the details surrounding Darcy's murder, informing them that before dropping Darcy off the bridge, Arthur had called Peta and told her to say goodbye. He said that Arthur had been extremely upset about the breakdown of his marriage and was angry about Peta's behaviour towards him before Darcy's murder. He said that the murder of Darcy was a deliberate act, stating, "What we say is that the accused, by a conscious, voluntary, and deliberate act, intending to kill, or at the very least, to cause very serious injury to Darcy Freeman, flung her from the top of the Westgate Bridge, and thereby killed her." During the opening statements from defence lawyer David Brustman, he said that his client was so mentally impaired at the time of the incident that he'd been unable to distinguish between right and wrong. He said that Arthur's actions that morning were not of a sane mind functioning properly, but of a highly distorted mind, a mind suffering from mental illness. He said that such a person should be found not guilty, adding that the defence would not be disputing the facts of the case. He asked the jury to keep an open mind while listening to the evidence, and urged them to consider, was Mr. Freeman mad? Or was he bad? Should he be condemned forever for the killing of his daughter, or should he ultimately be treated until he's well enough to function in society? From the opening statements, it was evident that the question of the trial would hinge on how culpable was Arthur Freeman that morning. While Darcy's brother Ben would not be called to testify as a witness, the court would hear his description of that fateful morning from an interview he had with investigators following his sister's murder. He said that moments before Darcy was killed, she and he had been playing games in the back seat of their father's car. Darcy had been pulling faces and making shapes with her hands, while Ben was tapping his knees like a drummer. Darcy was in a good mood and was really excited to start her first day of primary school. He described how they pulled over on the top of the bridge, and his father carried Darcy over to the side of the bridge like a baby, adding that when he dropped her, she didn't scream. Ben said that he shouted at his father to go back to get Darcy because she couldn't swim, stating, "I kept on saying it over and over again, and he never did." CCTV footage would then be presented from outside the Commonwealth Law Courts building following Darcy's murder. Ben and Jonathan were grabbing at Arthur's waist and tugging his arms, but he didn't acknowledge them. Tears were streaming down his face, but he didn't wipe them away. Security guard Rao Aziz testified that Arthur had asked him if he was all right, and he began to cry before asking him to take his children. Senior Constable Sean Hill said that when he arrived at the Commonwealth Law Courts, Arthur was rocking back and forth and told the constable to take him away. His testimony would be followed by Senior Constable Alistair Nisbet, who was one of the first officers on the scene after Darcy was thrown from the bridge. He said that he had raced down to the bridge, stating, "As I got closer, I began to make out a figure of a child, much like a doll, lying in the water." Witnesses from the bridge that morning would be called to testify. Their testimony would show just how impactful the murder of Darcy was. It was an extremely public murder and something that the witnesses would never, ever forget. Gregory Cohen had to stop himself from crying as he recalled seeing Darcy being dropped over the railing. He said that he only allowed himself to remember so far. Annette Bartlett, another witness, said that her life had become a black hole of depression. She said that since that day she had not been able to bring herself to drive over the bridge. She also said, "I cannot see myself ever forming a relationship with a male, as the trust would not be there." Christine Gow, an ambulance officer, was one of the first on the scene that morning. She said that that day was her birthday, but now the day only brings back bad memories of the worst case she had ever seen since joining Ambulance Victoria in August of 1998. Police officer Colleen Spiteri spoke of Darcy's last moments in the hospital. She said that she told Peter that in her short time she was with her daughter, she loved her, so that Darcy could have love around her as she passed away. She said that her sadness had not diminished since that day, and she often thought about what must have been running through Darcy's head. Thoughts such as, "Why did my daddy do this to me? Doesn't he love me?" The courtroom fell silent as Peter stood up to the witness stand. She said that the night before Darcy's murder, she had called Arthur and asked to speak with their three children. Arthur, however, said he was not with the three children, but would get them to call her the following morning. They never phoned. That morning, Peter and her mother went to St. Joseph's Primary School so that they could walk Darcy through the gates on her first day of school. They arrived at around 8:30 that morning and watched all of the other children enter the school grounds as they waited for Arthur to arrive with the children. When he failed to arrive, Peter called him and he told her, "Say goodbye to your children." After the phone call, Peter reported her children missing. She phoned the solicitor who had helped her reach a financial settlement and finalise custody agreements with Arthur, and then called the school principal. Peter then went back home to get photographs of the children, which she and her mother then took to the local police station. In court, she said, "My solicitor contacted me to let me know that there was a news report that a child, a female child, had been thrown from the West Gate Bridge." Peter went to the police station and was taken to the Royal Children's Hospital, where Darcy had been rushed to. Peter told the courtroom that Arthur began having mood swings when they returned to Australia from the United Kingdom back in 2006. She said she believed that Arthur could have been suffering from depression. Dr. Matthew Lynch, who performed Darcy's autopsy, would then describe her injuries. She had suffered a ruptured spleen, a torn small intestine, a collapsed lung, and extensive bruising to her heart and the majority of her body. She had also suffered significant brain injuries. As the grim injuries were read out in court, Arthur wiped away tears. He had remained stoic throughout all of the testimony beforehand. Following the information regarding the injuries that Darcy had sustained, psychiatrist Yvonne Skinner took to the witness stand. She had interviewed Arthur for 3.5 hours, and he had told her that he was angry, disappointed, and frustrated by a court order that limited his access to his children. She said that the facts of the case indicated that the motivation behind Darcy's murder was spousal revenge. She said that while Arthur was suffering from depression, he knew exactly what he was doing and knew that it was wrong, adding that he acted consciously and voluntarily when he threw Darcy from the bridge. She said, "I am not able to find any evidence that Mr. Freeman was suffering from a mental illness that had the effect that he did not know the nature and quality of the conduct, or did he know that the conduct was wrong." Her opinion would be refuted by Professor Graham Burrows, who would be called as the only defence witness during the murder trial. He said he believed that Arthur suffered from a major depressive disorder, and that he was in a dissociative state, similar to that of a sleepwalker, and likely psychotic at the time of the murder. This opinion would be called into question by psychiatrist Douglas Bell, who said that Arthur would not have been able to do something as complex as lifting Darcy over the railings of the bridge if he had been in a disassociated mental state at the time. He said that he needed to be aware of the environment and had to overcome obstacles before he could have thrown her over the bridge. In his closing statements, Prosecutor Silbert said that the testimony from the sole defence witness should be rejected, because he was contradictory and determined to justify his own expert opinions. He said that Arthur's not guilty plea on the grounds of mental impairment rested on the evidence of Professor Burrows. Six psychiatrists had assessed Arthur, and he was the only one to back the mental impairment defence. Defence Brustman countered this by stating, "Don't all of his actions scream at us madness? What we say to you is his impaired mind caused him to do this." The jury, which consisted of 5 men and 7 women, were then sent off to deliberate. It would take them 5 days to reach a verdict. They found Arthur Freeman guilty of the murder of Darcy Freeman. They had reached the conclusion that Arthur had been so angry at Peter that he carried out the ultimate act of spousal revenge. As the verdict was read out, Arthur showed no emotion. The sentencing phase would follow, and Peter was given the opportunity to provide an impact statement. While she had remained extremely composed during the trial, she broke down on several occasions as she spoke to the courtroom. As she broke down in tears, junior prosecutor Diana Pikus took over. Reading from her statement, she said, "I can feel her little hand holding mine when I walk down the street or drive in the car. I lie in bed at night and hold her in my arms. I talk to her and think of her daily, wishing she was participating in the activities that were happening at that time. Nothing can change the loss of my daughter, and nothing can bring her back. I have, now and forever, only memories of her when I intended to have a lifetime of love and laughter. I will never get to live the life I dreamed and hoped of with Darcy, and nor will she with me. The loss of this is indescribable. Not a day goes by where I do not miss Darcy and wish that she was with me." She dismissed the notion that time heals all wounds. She said that seeing little girls with similar traits or looks to Darcy heightens her already active emotions, and that she has to hold herself back from giving the child a hug. Darcy's grandmother, Iris Barnes, said that at night when she's in bed, she lies awake and thinks of the terror that Darcy felt as she was thrown over the bridge. She said she could never comprehend how a human being could do something so horrific to an innocent child. Prosecutor Silbert said that Arthur should be sentenced to life in prison with no minimum term, adding that if a child cannot trust their parent to care for them and protect them, then a fundamental basis of civilization is destroyed. Defence Brustman, on the other hand, said that life in prison was not the only possible sentence, and that a minimum term should be imposed. Ultimately, the judge would sentence Arthur Freeman to life in prison with a 32-year non-parole period.
I now come to look at the matters of aggravation in this case. This was the killing of an innocent child. The circumstances of the killing were horrible. The throwing of your 4-year-old daughter from a bridge more than 80 metres above the ground could not be more horrible. What Darcy's last thoughts might have been does not bear thinking about. and her death must have been a painful and protracted one. Your conduct is a most fundamental breach of trust, and it's an attack on the institution of the family, which is so dear to the community. The killing was in the presence of your son Benjamin, who was then 6, and your son Jack, who was 2. The community hopes Jack will be too young to remember. Any motive which existed for the killing had nothing to do with the innocent victim. It can only be concluded that you used your daughter in an attempt to hurt your former wife as profoundly as possible. Whatever happens, you will spend what may be regarded by many as the best years of your life in prison. I have come to the conclusion that it is appropriate to fix a non-parole period. I do not regard you as being beyond redemption. You are only 37 years of age. I've had regard to your mental illness, and although I do not regard it as such significance relative to the seriousness of your offending to lead me to fix a sentence other than life imprisonment as the head sentence, I have taken it into account in deciding both whether I should fix a non-parole period and deciding what that non-parole period should be. I have taken into account your previous good behaviour. I have taken into account the references tendered on your behalf and the support which you have from your direct family. I have taken into account those matters put on your behalf on the plea, except where I have indicated that I do not regard it as appropriate to do so. One of the very unfortunate features of this case is that others seem to blame themselves for what you have done. They should not. You did what you did. You are responsible for it, and nobody else is. Would you stand up, please? You will be sentenced to be in prison for life. I fix a period of 32 years before you will be eligible for parole. I declare that you've served 802 days pursuant to this sentence. I direct that this declaration and its details be entered in the records of the court. It means that the earliest date you will qualify to be released will be the 29th of January 2041, when you will be 67 years of age. Would you adjourn the court, please?
Therefore, the court adjourns, Your Honour. I make application.
In handing down the sentence, Justice Paul Coughlin described Arthur as self-centred, with a tendency to blame others for his own problems in life. He said that Arthur had shown absolutely no remorse for what he had done, stating, "You are yet to say sorry to anyone for what you have done." He said that Darcy's last moments on earth, "Don't even bear thinking about." Moments after the verdict was handed down, Arthur launched into a diatribe which just confirmed the judge's assessment of his character. He accused a relative of Peter of being implicated in the theft of diamonds from a West Australian mine. He claimed that federal police had been tapping the family's phone and claimed that he had received death threats. He made no apology, nor did he mention the little girl that he threw to her death. Before he got a chance to spew any more, the guards forced him out of the courtroom. Following the trial, Child Safety Commissioner Bernie Geary recommended that there be an urgent review of child safety reporting after it was revealed that Child Protection Services had never been made aware of any dangers to the life of Darcy or her brothers. He said that there needed to be a re-look at the protocols between the Department of Human Services and the Family Court as a matter of urgency. Back in 2010, the federal budget had slashed funding for family relationship centres by $48.4 million over 4 years, and this meant that the amount of free mediation made available to couples separating reduced from 3 hours to just 1. The lack of funding for the family court had meant that families were going through long delays for their cases to be resolved, while counselling services for families were farmed out of court, as opposed to having psychologists at court to support families. The overhaul of the Family Law Act came into effect on the 7th of June 2012. It dramatically broadened the definition of family violence to include psychological abuse of children, including seeing or hearing their parents argue, as well as coercive or controlling behaviour of a family member. In 2015, it was announced that the state coroner would be examining the murder of Darcy, and investigating the family violence reporting practices of doctors and lawyers. It would uncover that on three separate occasions, Peter had told three separate GPs of her fear about Arthur, but none of these fears were ever relayed to the police. In Victoria, GPs must contact police if they have a reasonable belief that a child is at significant risk of harm or abuse. All three of the GPs had seen Arthur attend the clinic with his children, and none of them had any concerns of violence. The inquest found that the law did not require a report to have been made by any of the doctors, but it would recommend that doctors be given more training on family violence and child abuse.
No one can erase the thoughts and associated feelings I have of sitting in the hospital and having to tell the hospital staff that they were allowed to turn the life support machine off, of holding Darcy in my arms as she passed away, and knowing that this decision would take her from me again, and knowing that there was no other option available to me.
On that fateful morning, instead of meeting her teacher and making brand new friends, Darcy Freeman was thrown 58 metres to her death by the man who was supposed to love her and care for her the most. The 29th of January 2009 was supposed to be the biggest milestone in Darcy's short life. But instead, it was the day the trust she had in her father was shattered into a million pieces. The murder of Darcy had a profound effect on those who loved her, as well as those who had never even met her. It inspired change in the form of suicide prevention barriers. And while they came far too late for Darcy, they ensure that no other child would meet the same fate that she did. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to say a big massive thank you to my amazing new Patreon supporters, Kerry, Andrea, and Heather. If you'd like to support the show on Patreon, the link is in the show notes. In return for your support on Patreon, you get exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, which aren't on the regular podcast platforms, merch, ad-free and early release episodes, behind the scenes, which includes extra audio and case files, and much more. Can I ask a huge favour and ask if you enjoy Morbidology, please consider voting for Morbidology for Listener's Choice at the British Podcast Awards. Indie podcasts never get a look in for their regular categories, but it would be amazing for an indie podcast to have a shot at Listener's Choice. I've included the link in the show notes, and it literally takes 2 seconds, and I would be eternally grateful. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. And please stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing true crime podcast, Murder, She Spoke. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
I'm Joanna.
I'm Emma.
We're the hosts of Murder, She Spoke, a true crime podcast focusing on Scottish crimes and disappearances. The more obscure, the better.
If you enjoy hearing about lesser-known crimes, both solved and unsolved, join us as we share victim stories and try to shine some light on the darkness.
While we take the cases seriously, we don't take ourselves seriously, and we always end with a funny true crime fact.
You can find Murder, She Spoke on your favourite podcast platforms on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Have you ever come across the concept of custom beauty? I know it sounds skeptical. It's like every time you scroll online, there's a new miracle product promising to fix your hair and skin woes. But let me tell you, Prose is the real deal when it comes to custom beauty. It's not just some marketing gimmick. Your personalised formula wouldn't even exist without your input. Each product on Prose is whipped up just for you, tailored to your specific needs, and they go deep into their consultations, delving into over 80 factors to really get a handle on your life and beauty goals. We're talking about everything from your hair and skin concerns to what you eat, how much you work out, and even how stressed you are. My friend Jen has been using Prose and raving about it non-stop. They even asked her about her zip code to suss out things like water hardness and UV index. When I hit the States later this year, Prose is going to be at the top of my shopping list. But until then, I'm living vicariously through Jen's luscious locks and glowing skin. Trust me, this stuff is the real deal. Prose is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer, so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at prose.com/morbidology. That is prose.com/morbidology for your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formula, prose.com/morbidology.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.